So we're gonna start off today a little bit differently.
Okay.
We started today a little differently. I got a little bit of a plan section for our cold open. We got made fun of last week because we didn't do a cold open.
Exactly.
In our Discord, we were getting
relentlessly bullied.
Someone immediately made a meme as soon as the episode dropped. But yeah. I got a little bit of a segment that I want to run through. Okay. I don't necessarily have a title for this.
I'm excited. I'm going in blind.
Gage is going in blind. I'm going to make Gage do here is he's going to take the phrases that I say. Okay. He's going to take the takes that I give him.
Okay.
And he's going to defend them regardless of what they are.
Hey, yo.
And we're going to start off light, okay? The first one. Sharing passwords on streaming services is unethical, and it should be a crime.
Okay, fuck off. That shit is so stupid. I saw that. I saw that this week. Netflix said they're going to, like, what, crack down? Yeah. They said they're cracking down on, like, the 200 million households uh-huh. that have been sharing passwords.
Uh-huh.
That shit is so fucking
You
got to
defend it, bro. You're a corporate
I gotta defend
person.
It?
Yeah, you got to defend it.
You're paying for a service. You are paying for that service. The service is specifically priced for one person to receive that much of the service. You're stealing. You're stealing the labor of Netflix's employees, the employees of all the production companies.
Uh-huh.
I bet IATSE wouldn't like that. They just went on strike, don't you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's,
all right.
That's theft.
Goated. Goated.
Easy. All right, next one. Earth Day should be a time of reflecting on your individual behavior.
Facts.
And not that of corporations.
Think about how many plastic straws are going to end up in little turtles' mouths because you're selfish. Instead, you could use the really cool cereal straws from a while back ago. Those were very good.
You know, there's an impending climate crisis, and if you just pulled yourself up by your bootstraps, you could probably avoid all of that.
I don't care
if you're living like in northern Africa and uh-huh. going through food droughts like once every 3 months. It literally doesn't matter. Stop trying to find a better life for yourself and just build one where you are.
Exactly. This is also just a plea for me to get Kellogg to bring back those like Applejack straws. Those were very good.
Yeah, literally.
I liked those.
Exxon did not pay us to say any of this.
Yeah. This is not a sponsored segment, guys.
All right. Two more here.
Okay.
Private prisons are a good thing. Privately owned, privately operated, good things.
They can run more efficiently uh-huh. than a state sponsored program.
It's true.
Naturally, they aren't not the same regulations as like a state sponsored prison.
But that's good.
Thanks for a good reason.
Yep.
That deregulation is very good. They can do more with their prisoners.
Yeah, you know, I think it's actually a good thing when private prison companies can set occupancy levels.
Yeah.
Minimum occupancy levels are like 95%.
Yeah.
To the point where if a state doesn't reach that occupancy level, they have to pay the corporation more because the corporation's not getting all of the deal uh-huh. that they wanted, which actually doesn't incentivize the state to just imprison more people to avoid having to pay.
Also, hear me out. Because we live in a free market, right?
Right.
And the free market works 100% of the time. Because they're profiting
uh-huh.
from uh-huh. these prisons, they have more of an incentive. That's a word for you lazy liberals that don't want to get up and do work a day in your life. They have more of an incentive to, they only have an incentive to imprison people.
Exactly.
No.
That's good.
They have more of an incentive to keep people who are in prison. No. They have more of an incentive to, next question.
No, look, all of this boils down to if you don't want to go to a private prison, don't commit crime.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter that private prisons have been literally proven to have worse conditions. Doesn't matter if private prisons, you know, have more assaults that happen inside of them.
Yeah.
If the cops or the wardens inside the prisons treat prisoners more harshly, if they always have negative mental health outcomes. It actually doesn't matter.
No,
it doesn't matter if it doesn't even impact crime rates in the place that it's located in. It doesn't matter if it actually costs the taxpayers more.
Yeah.
It's good because free market.
Oh, yeah. Because they profit, that means they can hire the best correctional officers.
Oh, and it's also private prisons are not a direct consequence of the war on drugs when more people started to get locked up and actual federal prisons were beginning to overflow, so they had to outsource to private business.
True.
It's not a consequence of that at all, and therefore good.
Therefore, the private prisons are very good.
All right, last one. You ready to defend this one?
I'm so ready.
The left and the right are both wrong. Wanting universal health care is the same as wanting an ethnostate.
Guys, you see, there are extremists on both sides, and you've really got to find yourself in the middle because somewhere there's the right idea. but it can't lie on an extreme, because $15 minimum wage, that's extreme.
So extreme.
You're only hurting small businesses, and also racism is bad.
It's true. $15 minimum wage, way too extreme. Wanting mothers to be able to stay with their children for longer than like 6 weeks, that's too extreme.
No, no,
in
no.
America,
I,
we
I
work.
See what you're trying to do here. I see what you're trying. You're trying to appeal to people's morals, but I'm sorry, but that's just not economical. That is not. How are we going to pay for it?
You know, as my favorite politician said,
okay.
Joe Manchin.
Oh,
in America, you work.
Work. That's right.
In America, right. You work.
That reminds me of a sentiment echoed by my favorite celebrity, Kim Kardashian.
True.
Women need to get up and work.
Oh, yeah. That actually also reminds me of another sentiment echoed by just about every single small business or large business owner after unemployment benefits started to get annoying, which is nobody wants to come work anymore for $3 an hour.
Facts.
Working
Shit.
For tips.
Shit.
Like nobody wants to work anymore. The left isn't right. The right isn't right. It's got to be in the middle. Always has
it's
to be in the
really
middle.
It really has to be in the middle, guys. You don't want to be an extremist.
You know, the right wants to light the planet on fire in pursuit of profit. The left doesn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same thing. These are the same thing. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day, everybody. You know. I'm now a reactionary conservative.
True. Me too.
I enjoyed that segment.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I hope you're ready for an interesting week of news. Not very a newsy news week.
Yeah, it's been a light news week.
Kind of a light news week. Kind of a lot happened. Kind of not. You'll see what we mean.
Exactly.
You'll see what we mean. But before we even get into the show, you know what? You could probably predict.
You could probably guess if you've been listening, if you've been binging a couple of the episodes, what we do at the top of every single show after the intro music plays.
Exactly. You heard the intro music, so you know I'm going to tell you to go check out the Patreon. Head in the office pod.
Check out the Discord.
Discord.
Check out the Twitter.
You got a Discord. It's all in the description, whether you're watching on YouTube or on Apple or Spotify, whatever. It's all there.
Exactly.
Check it out. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube. I think you can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts so you get like updates when
Ooh,
the show comes out.
You can
out.
Also follow on yeah. Spotify.
Exactly.
That's a funky feature.
Check all of that out. Check out our TikTok. You're probably from TikTok. Thank
Most
you.
Likely. Yeah. yeah.
If you're here, you're here to stay. And you know, you're welcome to here. Make
exactly.
yourself cozy.
Very
Buckle up,
here.
Because we got a good news week for you, kind of, in a little bit.
Kind of,
but
something.
Before we even get into it.
You also know after we plug all the socials, what do we say?
You gotta go leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It helps us boost the show.
That's
Maybe we'll get into new and noteworthy
right.
at some point.
That's right.
That's the goal. And we do have some 5-star reviews to read today. We actually have 5 of them.
We've got a couple.
If you could believe it to be true, we've
That's
got 5
a lot.
Of them. You want to take the first two?
I'll take the first two. Funny and informative by SK81946.
Yup.
You guys keep me updated on current events and crack me up at the same time. Thanks for helping us laugh instead of cry.
We got you.
What can I say?
We're always giving you the laughs. We're here to deliver the laughs. That's what you pay us for.
It's so true. So true. That's what we're here to do.
We make the big bucks.
Oh, yeah. The next one. Funny by Year 293. This show is both equally funny and informative and keeps me from purposefully swerving off the road and killing myself in a video game.
Roblox.
Fresh takes, hot takes, and putrid news all around.
It's true.
I appreciate the hot takes after the other review with the mildly cold takes.
Yeah.
Mildly lukewarm yeah. takes.
You can get at least lukewarm takes in this one.
Exactly.
All right, next review is subject line Yo by Royal Blue Tiger. They say, if I wasn't below the poverty line, I'd buy these to a studio and equipment myself.
So kind.
I know, that's
so
crazy.
Kind.
But because I am, all I can do is say that supporting intelligent, well-spoken, and caring guys like Jeremy and Gage is honestly so fucking important if the younger generation stands any hope of perpetuating change. The pod's dope. Do it a listen.
I agree.
I agree.
Wholeheartedly.
Yeah, no, if you're listening so far into the show and you were thinking of tuning out, Royal Blue Tiger says not to. So you have
Facts.
To listen.
Facts.
You have to listen. We've got 2 more here.
Okay.
If I can pull them up for you all real quickly.
That's right.
And you know what? I'm going to preface this. These 5-star reviews, still 5-star reviews, but they're giving us a little bit of criticism, but you know, we don't run from that. You know, we don't run away from that. So this one is called Good Start by Daniel Anthony 1997. They say, Jeremy and Gage do a great job of summarizing politics and making topics relevant to Gen Z. Their jokes are funny and they have good banter. But my brothers in Christ,
okay.
Please do more produce segments and incorporate research into your analysis. We try, bruh.
We try.
We try so hard. I don't know what else you want us to
do. Frankly, it will be easier this summer to do a little bit more research.
It's true.
Put some more figures and statistics in there.
Exactly.
And also do more produce segments. But right now, my brother in Christ, I am beaten, battered, and bruised trying to make my way through this degree.
True, and we're still delivering the content, though.
Of course, naturally. And funny, that seems to be a common note.
Exactly. We're very funny. Very funny guys, apparently. And then the last review here is subject line, second best Michigan-based leftist podcast by Jim Carrey, 89.
Okay.
They say, the left is dead is clearly number one. This review won't be read on mic by big tech censorship left bros. You know, this isn't saying that we concede the number one spot by any means.
Never.
We would never do such a thing. But we still appreciate the 5-star review. We still appreciate it.
Always.
Still always appreciate it.
Also, still number one geopolitics podcast.
Always.
Don't you ever forget
permanently.
That.
Number one local politics podcast, state politics, national politics,
number
geopolitics.
Number one funny podcast.
Exactly. Number one comedians on the air is us in the basement.
Right. That's right.
Anyway, let's get into the news coverage.
Quick mask mandate coverage.
Yeah, we do got to talk about the mask mandate really quickly because I think a lot of people have been confused this week.
And I think a lot of people have also just forgot that COVID exists.
That's true. One person that may have forgot that COVID exists is a Florida judge.
How surprised are we?
Last week, a Florida judge ruled that they are that people are not required to wear a mask on public transit anymore. And it was a federal judge. So this applies to, you know, mask mandates across the nation.
Oh,
what the ruling basically constituted was saying that the CDC doesn't have the power to enforce a mask mandate on public transit, which seems kind of fucking insane.
Yeah.
It's the CDC.
Yeah.
The center
for
disease control.
That's kind of their job, like their specialty, the thing that they're tasked with doing.
Yeah. You know, when I think of government, especially federal government, I do think of public health is one of the main things they're supposed to do, you know, prioritize public health. What do I know, though?
Conservatives also always love to talk about how bureaucracy oftentimes, like in all these like federal procedures, get in the way of actually like doing the right thing when it's just them.
Yep.
It's just them getting in the way of a public health measure.
It's just people on their side that are causing the problem. The Biden administration's already said that they're going to challenge this ruling in the courts. So I think it's basically already in effect because there's those videos that came out on like a Delta airline or something.
Oh, God.
Where they were like mid-flight.
Uh-huh.
And the pilot came on like the PA system and was like, the mask mandate's over, you can take them off. And people literally cheered. Because, you know, what you want during a flight is, you know, some news. That's really what you want. You know, everyone on the flight just had no choice
but
to be around that.
It's probably the same pilot that got in trouble for saying, let's go, Brandon, like on the radio.
Bro's pushing it again. It's so funny that like imagine you're on a flight and you just hear over the PA that the mask mandate's lifted and you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, there's nothing for you to do.
You just got, like, what if you're immunocompromised? Like, you just got to take it, I guess.
You just take that shit on the chin.
Anyway, this news comes after several universities, including colleges in D.C., Pennsylvania, Texas, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York, have moved to reimpose their mask mandates and even send some classes into online learning as the academic year ends.
That's crazy. MSU did the opposite.
So did my university. Yeah, my university just removed all mask mandates for the campus starting like May 3rd or something like that. So there's no mask mandate at all. I think the vaccine mandate's still in effect, but no mask mandate whatsoever. And it's not like they're checking for the vaccine.
No,
you know what I mean?
You can literally just lie.
Yeah.
All you have to do, you shouldn't lie. You should get your vaccine. It's important. But literally all I had to do was check a box that said, yes, I got vaccinated. Yes, I didn't lie.
Yeah.
So crazy.
Also, just a note that variants of Omicron have been proliferating throughout Africa. I think South Africa specifically, I haven't seen an uptick in cases in the United States. I think, like, on the graph, there's, like, it's starting to go up a little. But I don't know that that's going to be, like, another surge or anything. I'm no epidemiologist.
But it's also just hard to find coverage about COVID anymore.
True.
Because I'm pretty sure, one, every single, like, legacy media outlet is trying to bury it for the midterms.
Yeah.
Because it's very bad optically. Mm-hmm. And two, nobody fucking gives a shit anymore.
Yeah, and it's like, I was looking at the graphs for COVID cases in the United States throughout the entirety of the pandemic, mm-hmm. and during the big bump that we got before the biggest one that we had, like, near January and stuff, that was our largest leap in mm-hmm. COVID cases at the time, before we had the giant spike where we had, like, a million cases a day.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really covered that much.
No.
Like, nothing really changed. Like, there were mask mandates on college campuses still. Some classes were online, but I was in person at that time. Like,
yeah, no, I was also
in,
fully
like,
in
October
person.
Of last year. Like, that's when we were having our second to last COVID peak, and then the big one hit, and then coverage obviously started again because you can't ignore a million cases a day.
Yeah, facts.
But before that, I mean, no one was really talking about COVID.
It feels like literally everyone I knew in January had COVID.
Yeah,
except for this motherfucker.
Except
over
for
here.
Me. Except for me. I've been dodging it the entire time. Anyway, It seems like another wave is unlikely based on what I've heard from like researchers and scientists and stuff. It seems like another massive wave is unlikely. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we've said that like four times now.
So true.
So I don't know.
It's just only time till something, another variant, crazy variant pops up.
If you Google the COVID cases, or if you Google COVID cases in the United States and look at the graph throughout the last 2 years, and you look at the time in March of 2020, mm-hmm. where there was just like that tiniest peak and everyone was losing their fucking minds.
Yeah.
Like things were shutting down, classes were going online, people were putting on masks for the tiniest bump.
Yeah.
And we're still having like thousands of cases a day. I think like a couple hundred deaths a day. And like everything's coming undone. Everyone's as like, new variants are still circulating.
Fuck it.
And vaccination rates in the United States are pretty subpar.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
Love it.
You but I guess in other COVID news, okay. The COVID pill is available now.
That's it's called. Cool. That's a dub.
It's called Paxlovid. Apparently, but it treats COVID symptoms, and apparently it's pretty good from what I've heard.
Good shit.
So that's available to you if you ever get COVID. But let's hope you don't.
Let's hope you don't. Let's that's hope your update it on the mask mandate. Goes away.
That's your update on the mask mandate, people.
Facts.
Now
facts.
I want to dive into a little bit of a section on Florida.
Oh, the it culture seems like war. We've been having a lot of those recently.
Yeah, it has to do with Florida and the culture war. And I want to put in a little bit of electoralism at the end.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's the midterms.
To see it. Exactly.
The midterms have fully kicked off in the United States, but there's a couple of like debates coming up next week.
Next week, expect big midterm coverage. Yeah. We got a Dr. Oz debate.
Yep.
That's going to go crazy. Pennsylvania I'm so Senate excited. Race.
I think there's a debate maybe a couple of weeks ago with J.D. Vance. Do you know who J.D. Vance is? Running in Ohio.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
That dude is goofy. We might have to cover that. We might get more news on Marjorie Taylor Greene, which we'll talk about later this episode. But it should be a pretty exciting episode. But for right now, we're just going to give like a little precursor to that.
Okay. I'm ready.
But starting off with Florida. Florida's in the news again for two reasons. We got textbooks and we got Disney.
All right.
We're going to start off with textbooks. And this comes from an NPR report that said, quote, "The Florida Education Department has rejected 54 mathematics textbooks for its K-12 curriculum, citing reasons spanning from the inclusion of critical race theory to Common Core learning concepts." And I want to note that 28 of those rejections were explicitly on the basis of having critical race theory in the textbook.
Doc, it's fucking math. Like, what the fuck are they talking about? Is there a story problem that's like explicitly mentioned? I don't know. I can't even think of a scenario.
So, the articles that I read, critical race theory isn't in these textbooks really
it's
at
fucking
all.
Fucking math, of course it isn't.
But the one like race related thing that I read was like a story question, and it had to do with, you know, those racial bias tests that you can take that like help determine like statistically what racial biases you may have.
Uh-huh.
It was one of those in the textbook.
Okay.
But it wasn't for kids to take and figure out the racial biases. It was explaining the math used to get the answer.
Oh, yeah. No, textbooks do that all the time. And like reasonably so. It's so much better to teach kids like with a real life example, with real life math, like give them a real life story problem example, than just throw the Johnny had 83 watermelons type of question at them. Right. You know what I mean?
You know what I think it might be?
What?
So this is K-12 textbooks, right?
Okay.
And that means you got at least a good batch of textbooks that are going to like elementary kids or younger kids.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in those textbooks, there's always the cartoons.
Yeah.
And, like, the drawings to make math and other subjects more acceptable. Gotta be just banning the books that, like, feature black kids.
Oh, fuck.
Like, what else could it be? What else could it be? Why are they banning these books of critical race theory? Critical race theory now is just being black.
No, facts. Like, yeah.
Anyways, the GOP attack on education isn't new, of course.
So
right?
Fucking incredibly stupid.
We've been dealing with this really ever since the pod kicked off, and even before that, even before our lifetime, decades ago. But it's notable to say that Florida rejected in total 41% of its submitted textbooks.
Wow.
Almost half, which is like you would think like these numbers don't mean much without context,
true.
But that is an all-time high for rejections. At least in Florida, and probably compared to other states as well. Like, you usually don't see that many rejections coming for
facts.
Textbooks.
Especially, you know, math textbooks.
Yeah, like math.
Math textbooks. Because there is one example of a problem where they talk about real math.
Yeah.
That they're actually going to come across later in their lives.
Right. Like a bias test.
That
like, those
they're
are real
probably going to have to take to, like, get a fucking job.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And you may say, why does this all matter? You know, it's textbooks. Who cares?
Exactly.
It's textbooks in Florida. We know how Florida is. It might not even matter.
But exactly, you know? Like, who cares, you know?
That's what I was saying. Like, you know? Why is this even making headlines?
Yeah.
And then I looked into it a little bit more.
Okay.
And I realized that, like I said, CRT, not actually mentioned in the textbooks. It's an elementary school, or it's like K through 12.
Yeah.
And you don't learn about CRT in K through 12. We've said this many times. But what did appear consistently is this concept called social-emotional learning, or SEL, content.
Okay.
And SEL, from what I understand, is an educational framework that focuses on improving social and emotional intelligence among students while they're learning. So it's basically what I see it as is like learning to manage your emotions, observe your feelings, and set goals while you're learning about something. So it's like an acknowledgement that while kids are doing, you know, 2 + 2 in their head, there's a person on the other side of that learning, right?
Yeah.
It's understanding that, like, students have feelings about what they're learning about, even if it's something objective like
and
math.
It's like, you know, they've got some words of encouragement on a worksheet or some shit like that instead of just handing you a times table.
Right.
You know?
Right. And the DeSantis argument here, and I don't have an exact quote, but I can summarize that his argument is basically that, like, there's no feelings involved in 2 + 2. There's only the correct answer. It's only objectivity, which is a dumb argument for two reasons.
Yeah, that shit is stupid.
First of all, when you get into more complex math concepts, there's multiple ways to solve problems. It's stupid to try to confine people to one frame of thinking.
No, literally.
But also, and the more important one that has to do with like this SEL content, kids fucking hate math.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I say they hate math, it's got them, like, crying at the dinner table.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, kids struggle
with math. I'm fucking crying because of math right now. This shit is ridiculous.
Kids will fight for their life against math, and they will cry and be frustrated. Yeah, because they don't understand what it is. And when it's just thrown at them in this objective sense, they struggle with it because they're children.
And it's also thrown at them in purely theoretical scenarios. You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing you, like, hear from motherfuckers in high school is, why the fuck am I learning math? Why can't you, like, teach me accounting? As if they wouldn't sleep through accounting as well.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's what you hear all the time. And they're just trying to address that.
Right.
You know?
And like my underlying critique here is that if you are able to understand your anxiety and feelings about math that you may adopt like as a child because you weren't taught math in a very, I don't know, efficient way. So you start to just grow up hating it.
Yeah.
If you're taught it in a more healthy way where you're able to acknowledge your feelings about it, it's probably going to help you not only learn it and conquer the subject, but it also may make you more interested later on.
Facts.
Which is good because I'm pretty sure, aren't we having like a drought of people going into STEM fields right now or something like that? Like if we are able to get kids interested in this stuff by presenting it not as like, you got to fight for your life against this, but like, you know, this is a subject that you can be interested in. You should acknowledge your feelings about it and understand yourself, that kind of thing. I think that'll just help education in general. And what I learned from this is that conservatives are just against introspection.
No, 100%, because the reason that we teach math like the way we do, right, is because you're not doing it to learn math. You're doing it to learn how to problem solve.
Yeah.
You're learning it to learn how to like break down something into like simpler components. Everything stems from algebra. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Especially once you get into higher maths like calculus and shit. It's to learn how to problem solve. They absolutely don't want that.
Mm-mm.
He's trying to bring education back to where it was when the modern school day first started. And it was strictly to breed workers for factories in the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
That's all that they're trying to do. It's just to get worker bees.
Yeah. No, and it's just like conservatives are just against teaching children how to be more emotionally intelligent and just treat themselves with respect when they're trying to I just remember growing up as a kid in elementary school and in middle school, people would get so frustrated over math and so angry at themselves because they struggled to understand it. If we would have had some kind of framework to understand like, look, your feelings about the subject matter as well. You need to just like calm down, take your time, and you're going to get there. If teachers would have treated us like that, that would have been like infinitely better.
No, facts.
Like that is so much better. And to get rid of that kind of concept, that kind of mode of teaching is just fucking ludicrous. It's insane.
Just to nip it right in the bud as soon as things are starting to get better. No, I'm sorry. There is one objective answer.
And I think Ron DeSantis literally said, like, they want to soften our children or something like that. And it's like, bruh, come the fuck on. Like, you are such an evil demon.
Dog.
Like, you are an evil demon.
I want to see him. I want to see him come up and take a Calc 1 exam and see how he feels about it.
Yeah, he can't.
That shit, like, I want to see him do a fucking just anything in Calc 2. I want to see him do partial fraction decomposition and watch him fucking cry.
So Ron DeSantis actually did have some stuff to say about this, though.
Oh.
And it's a little incoherent, so stick with me.
All right, I'm here.
He said, quote, "It seems that some publishers attempted to slap a coat of paint on an old house built on the foundation of Common Core and indoctrinating concepts like race essentialism, especially bizarrely for elementary students." I don't know what any of that means.
Racial essentialism? Let me tell you what that's got to be. That's got to be, again, just like a picture in a math textbook to help kids understand, but a majority of the kids in the picture are black.
No, you know what it's got to be? It's got to be, like, you know how there will be those cartoons of, like, kids saying, like, oh, 2 plus 2 equals 5, and then it's another one correcting them?
Yeah.
It's got to be the white kid being wrong, and the black kid saying, actually, no, I disagree. It's got to be 4. That's
what that's Look, they're all trying to be. They're trying to teach your kids that...
They're trying to teach your kids that black people can have the right answer. That's it. I guarantee that's what it is. Ron DeSantis' education department looked through the books and were like, we can't teach kids that black people can be right sometimes.
Florida with the absolute dubs in education these past few months.
And then about critical race theory, he said that CRT is the theory that racism is not merely a product of prejudice, but that racism is embedded in American society and its legal systems in order to uphold the supremacy of the white person. If he was saying that, like, that's what society is, he'd be right.
That's crazy, because yes.
Like, yes. I don't get this whole idea that, like, okay, we acknowledge that people back in the 60s or even before that were creating American legal systems, we acknowledge that those people were racist. Mm-hmm. We have evidence of that. We can see that they were racist.
Yeah.
Why would you think that those people that were in power wouldn't create also racist systems that would discriminate in the same way that they did?
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
And it's like, it doesn't even have to be as explicit as that. It can be like the studies we've seen with AI and how AI discriminates because the person who coded the AI had biases that went unchecked that they ended up working into it. Or that data sets, because there's already an existing bias in who gets like the right, more positive sort of pictures on Google. Like, you look up 3 black teenagers and it's mugshots, whereas you look up 3 white teenagers and it's just kids playing in the yard or some shit like that. There are existing biases that just are implicit that have been built there. Just refusing to acknowledge that in of itself is fucking stupid.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, from what I understand about critical race theory, that's kind of what it's based on.
Yeah.
Is that, like, your the accepted version of objectivity is fundamentally built on biased foundations.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it already accepts, like, white normativity, heteronormativity as a basis for understanding.
Yeah.
When in reality, like, the systems that we live by have been created to produce biased outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And any acknowledgement or any kind of claim that our society isn't biased in some way or systemic racism doesn't exist is just, like, counterfactual to all available evidence.
Yeah.
Like, we have an overwhelming amount of evidence that black people are systemically oppressed, or, I mean, any person of color is systemically oppressed when compared to a white person. And anyone denying that just fundamentally doesn't understand statistics in any kind of way.
Facts.
And that's a silly thing to say.
Incredibly.
Yeah, you can quote me on that. And I wouldn't, honestly, just to end this section off,
okay,
I wouldn't be surprised if at some point it surfaced, like, years later, that DeSantis' education department only accepted books from publishers that donated to him during the campaign or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was all just rigged.
Sad reality, you know? and then he could just doubly lie. Like, he gets a double benefit here. He gets paid, mm-hmm. and he also gets to continue his war on CRT.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, if he's getting paid by the good publishers that only have white kids getting the right answer.
That's crazy.
Or if he's getting paid by the good publishers that make math books that make kids cry at the dinner table while teachers are not allowed to help them and teachers are not allowed to talk about, you know, anything related to their parents being gay. You know what
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As long as we're allowed to, you know, fine teachers tens of thousands of dollars for talking about parents. And we're allowed to make kids cry at the dinner table, then I think we're doing a good job.
I think we're doing a great job because it's gonna make them tough because of that one quote. You know what I'm talking about? The hard men create.
Oh yeah.
Soft times create soft men. You know?
Yeah, that one. Exactly. It's all a cycle.
That's true because it's true. You know?
Yeah, it is true.
A bunch of weak little bitches.
Joe Rogan said that.
So
it must be true.
Oh my god, bro! Conservatives just have such a just like on that topic, they have such a hard on for just making things hard.
Yeah.
You know, just not acknowledging that maybe people shouldn't be suffering for no reason. You know. Mm-hmm.
Well, right. It's like in their mind that this suffering builds some kind of adversity.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, brings about good outcomes. But in reality, I feel like the suffering that they, like, consider to be necessary is just unnecessary. It's just unnecessary suffering.
Oh.
In reality, like, it's just suffering to suffer. It's not actually, like, not being able to make ends meet and feed your kid is not suffering that's going to build character. Like,
yeah. It's fucking crazy, especially because I saw this post on the Fox News Instagram the other day about how, like, the Air Force is introducing this new program where you have, like, a 30-minute sit-down to talk about, like, programs or something. And Fox News disingenuously called it, like, a safe space program. And I was reading through the comments, and some of these are fucking crazy. I had to screenshot one of them. This guy said, the military is not the place for America's social experiments. Your, quote, safe place is at home before you sign the dotted line. I thought that they cared about veterans. Like, I thought that they were always the people talking about protect the troops. Nah. You know what I mean?
Nah. As soon as you sign up, your mental health no longer matters. You are simply an appendage of the state.
Literally what that dude said.
You're a killer. You're a killing machine. That's all we need you to do. Let's not even take a moment to consider maybe probably a vast majority of the military that doesn't actually do like infantry or anything and is like cleaning, cooking.
Most of military just kind of sits in an office.
Cleaning, cooking, fixing stuff, doing documents and stuff. Yeah. Like, let's not, you know, their mental health doesn't matter in any kind of way. Exactly. Certainly.
It doesn't matter that there are higher rates of sexual assault and still in those parts of the military too. And we need to talk about that because that's okay. Because what if they ever have to kill somebody?
But if we talk about things and we acknowledge our feelings,
true,
that makes us soft.
It does.
Because, you know, people in society, especially men, are not supposed to feel.
Mm-mm.
Everything is just reacting to external factors.
That's incredible.
Nothing happens inside here.
Feeling is incredibly feminine and therefore bad.
Exactly. It's fellas, bad. Is it feminine to feel? It's feminine to feel.
That's right.
Anyway, moving on to some more Florida news.
Back on topic.
Back on topic to some more Florida news. We got to talk about Disney.
Okay.
And as some of you may know, Disney is basically a local government over the space it occupies in Florida.
It's actually kind of wild.
It is kind of wild. And don't worry, we're not here to defend that in any kind of way.
Yeah,
but
no.
It's in the news, so we got to talk about it. So you'll recall that when the Don't Say Gay bill was being considered, Disney didn't speak out about it. All they really said was like
dead silent, in fact.
When their workers were calling on them to say something about the Don't Say Gay bill, all they really did was say, we're going to stay committed to making inclusive content. That's it.
No comment.
That's really all they said. But then after the bill passed, and after what was basically a strike from their workers, the company spokesperson for Disney condemned the bill. But not very harshly.
Not at
all.
All
they really said was like, this should be rescinded or it should just be struck down in court. It's not good. That's all they said. It was like it was like one of those Twitter statements that companies will put out where it's just a screenshot of some text with their logo on it, you know?
Yeah.
Just like one page.
No facts.
It wasn't anything
crazy.
It's
like a YouTube apology video.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, we're never gonna have to do those.
Not us, no.
And of course, Disney, having something to say about social issues, pissed Ron DeSantis right off.
Absolutely.
Lit this man on fire. He started to challenge, or he just straight up challenged the Florida legislature to repeal Disney's status as a like a special district in Florida.
I love it when they can just retaliate against a company for doing something.
Well, a little bit more context. Disney sits on Reedy Creek, which is like their little location, and they're responsible for maintenance. They're responsible for things like debt, fire department, power, water, etc. But they also have the benefit of not having to deal with like added regulations that a normal company would sitting in like a local district or whatever.
Yeah.
So they get a little bit more leeway, but they're also responsible for a lot more. But the Florida legislature just passed a bill that would dissolve Disney's status starting on June 1st, 2023. So not until a year.
That's fucking insane.
But I also, but I want to note that Disney takes on billions of dollars in like maintenance fees and debts and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All of that money is now going to fall on the Florida state. And it's also going to fall on local residents to pay those taxes back. So Florida, in their quest to, I mean, I don't know, destroy the LGBTQ, raise taxes on their own residents.
It's just like how Greg Abbott's like stunt at the border, where he decided to slow everything down and check every vehicle, literally just cost Texas $4.2 billion.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insane. Don't get me wrong. It's already kind of fucked that a private corporation like Disney has so much power over like a small area in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's absolutely fucked. And I don't know how I feel about it. Kind of shouldn't be a thing, but it shouldn't be a thing because the governor of Florida decided Disney did something that he didn't like. So now he's going to punish them.
Yeah, no, that was exactly the point I was going to make is like, I don't think corporations should ever just be considered their own government.
Yeah.
That seems a little feudalism
to
me.
A little sussy.
A little
corporate towny.
But it does exemplify how conservatives always pretend to be free market and pro-free business until their financial backers just step out of line. Then they will use the power of the state to literally crush them and take away any of the tax exemptions or regulation exemptions that they have.
Like, isn't that just low-key like a complete violation of First Amendment rights?
You would think so.
You know what I mean?
Right. I thought corporations were people.
Facts.
You know, I thought they could say whatever they want.
Shout out Clarence Thomas.
And now they're literally just being crushed by the hand of the state. But I thought the free market mattered.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the state was an impediment to the free market and the state should be small and not exist.
This is a very opaque hand. This is not the invisible hand acting to regulate
all
the market.
All Disney
here.
Did was say, like, we don't want the Don't Say Gay bill to go into effect. That was all they said.
It's like they said that, and then there were internal memos going around of like staffers talking about how they want like half their characters to be gay or like queer in some way or some shit, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay. And they're up in arms about how that's indoctrination. And that's because that's why Ben Shapiro announced his $100 million Daily Wire initiative for more kids content.
Yeah. That's so funny. I love how like they think that there are more gay people and trans people around today because of some policy decision or because corporations like Disney are talking about gay people more. They've always existed. The difference is that these people have been oppressed and basically compelled into not being who they are in public.
Yeah.
Like, gay people and trans people have been around for all of human history.
They're just, surprise, surprise, more comfortable about being open about it now.
Yeah, and that's a good thing.
maybe they just realize that they don't have to repress these feelings anymore and that they're just kind of comfortable being who they are.
Yeah, and that's not even a ubiquitous thing. There's tons and tons, hundreds of people, I'm sure, that are still afraid to be who they are in certain places because they're afraid that they're going to get hate crimes.
Exactly.
Like, but the fact that we are becoming more accepting and in places that are maybe like a little bit more liberal, people are free to express themselves, that's a good thing.
No, facts. And it's like
it's not a result of any democratic policy position. Mm-hmm. It's the result of society and culture changing, something that conservatives are very, very afraid of all the time.
And you can't tell me that we don't live in a heteronormative society when people just have to come out.
Yeah.
The existence of having to come out just completely spits in the face of that. Until a dude can just go and fuck a dude and not have to come out about it. And everybody's like, oh, okay, whatever, that's cool.
We're not a free society.
We're not a free society. It's true. I mean, am I wrong?
No, that's a good point. I mean, you're just assumed to be straight until you say otherwise.
Exactly.
Like that's what heteronormativity really is. And anyway, back to Disney. You may say, like, okay. The left does the same thing, you know. The left is always demanding that corporations act different. At the very least,
I'm honest about it.
Right, we're intellectually honest that we don't like corporations, and they need to act at least more ethically, or just be nationalized as a whole.
And it's like I don't necessarily advocate to crush a corporation, get rid of any like protections they have, because I don't know, they said systemic racism doesn't exist.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because that would basically be the equivalent on the other side.
Right. What we advocate for is like higher taxes on corporations.
Yeah.
But that's always a ubiquitous policy. And like it's going to be a policy that affects everyone generally. It's not going to like impact a corporation that like pays their workers $9 an hour more than a corporation that pays their workers well.
Yeah.
Or a corporation that like, I don't know, has racial bias training versus one that doesn't. Like, we're not going to punish one for one practice over the other because like that's just not something we need to do. Like, if we're getting their tax dollars, I don't give a fuck. Like,
I don't say fuck Amazon. No, I don't want to raise taxes on Amazon strictly because they're union busing. You know what I mean? You know, I want to do that because that union busing is causing a material harm.
Yeah.
Like, they materially do bad things to people. They're not just coming out and saying something stupid.
Yeah. So, just so you know, conservatives will use the power of the state to literally crush their enemies, apparently now even in the private sector.
That's not very small government of you.
Not very small government at all. And I want to note that, like, private businesses have always spoke out about cultural issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, businesses do it on the right all the time. Like, there was a Supreme Court case involving Hobby Lobby that refused to give their workers contraception. While Roe v. Wade was still like I guess abortion's always been a big topic, but while it was like flaring up in the public eye, they refused to give their workers contraceptives as a part of their healthcare plan, and Hobby Lobby won.
Yeah, like that shit's fucking crazy. I'm pretty sure, what is it, Dave Ramsey? I've talked about him a couple times, big personal finance guy at his company. I think if you get an abortion, he'll just fucking fire you. Like there have been cases of that. So that's fun. That's fun.
Yeah, and like conservatives won't use the power of the state to step in that case.
I love
But they'll use the power of the state to crush a corporation that just said, let's be inclusive.
Let's be inclusive.
Like let's maybe not hate gay people.
Guys, gay people exist.
Yeah, let's maybe, you know, teach kids that different kinds of people exist. Uh-huh. No, the state is going to step in and stop you by taking away massive amounts of funding for you.
It's just absolutely fucking insane
that
corporations can dictate like what you can do, like even within things that are legal.
Yeah.
Like it goes with that. The Dave Ramsey abortion thing, and it also goes with drug testing and just how absolutely fucking fucked drug testing is, especially for marijuana in states that it's legal. Like, really?
Yeah.
Nobody tests for alcohol.
Yeah.
What is this?
I should be allowed to do as many drugs as I want and go operate heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, you should. You unironically, yes, as long as it doesn't affect work. As long as you're not, like, high while operating that heavy machinery. If you just do it at home and you're chilling and you come to work sober, do whatever the fuck you want. Corporations shouldn't be able to have that much power over your personal life.
GOP cares about freedom, though.
That's right.
GOP
That's
cares
right.
about freedom. But also, like, with this Disney stuff, I mean, the right has just gone absolutely fucking bonkers on Disney recently. Uh-huh. Even though Disney has historically funded right-wing candidates for office.
I've seen...
because they give them tax cuts.
I've seen right-wingers... I'm pretty sure DeSantis said something about how they always hire they're funding these Democrats to run for office. It's like, no, they're funding you too.
Yeah.
They're funding literally everybody.
I think they funded the sponsor of the Don't Say Gay bill. Yeah. I think they've donated to that person. I don't remember exactly who it is. But, and like, you have Marjorie Taylor Greene at press conferences saying that Disney is grooming children now. Because they're having, like, gay characters be present in their stories. Gay, okay. Disney has never, I'm sure they have in some stories, but they've really never adhered to one type of, I don't know, archetypal family or a heteronormative couple or anything like that. For example, the thing I'm thinking of is Lilo and Stitch, right?
Yeah.
That was not a traditional family.
Like modern Disney has been, like, more progressive.
Exactly.
If you're talking about, like, the princess movies, very heteronormative. Of course. Very traditional. But, like, modern Disney, Lilo and Stitch, like, Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
Shit like that. It's been more non-traditional family.
Wait,
dynamics.
And Lilo and Stitch, it was two gay alien dudes. Like, that was those were two of the characters. Like, they were gay. Like, they were gay in Lilo and Stitch.
They were gay-coded, yeah, like, for sure.
And, like, the main character didn't have a mother and father with her.
Yeah,
it was her older
sister.
Exactly. Like, Disney in modern history hasn't really been all that conservative or, I don't know, traditionalist in what they're producing.
Yeah.
But now they're being called groomers out of nowhere.
Literally.
Like, it's so fucking stupid.
Literally. It's been a trend for, like, the last 20 years.
I know.
A little more socially progressive. And a little more found family dynamics.
It's not like it's just Disney. This is, again, it's just cultural shifts.
Yeah.
Culture changes all the time. I would argue that the state of culture is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no stationary culture.
Yeah, no, of course. That shouldn't even be a hot take. Like, that yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is the mission of far-right people, or fascists, if you will.
Yes.
To prevent culture from changing because they're afraid something's being taken from them or the progression of social values will lead to them losing something.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the basis of their argument against things like, for example, ending slavery or ending segregation, ending Jim Crow laws. It's always the same kind of argument. And pushing back against cultural changes to be more accepting of minority groups is just fascist. Like, that's all it is.
Yeah.
Like, that's sus behavior, big dog.
No wonder that they are always on the wrong side of history.
I really love how the right-wing strategy so far has just been, like, their messaging strategy the last 2 years has just been, like, incorporate QAnon into the mainstream narrative. You know
just
what I
legitimize
mean?
Legitimize QAnon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the groomer shit. Isn't that just QAnon?
It's just the it's Pizzagate and its consequences. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Literally. And then you had Ted Cruz.
Oh, no.
He issued a statement on this. You know, being in Texas, he's just got to say something about Florida.
He's actually always got to fucking stick his nose where nobody wants it to be.
Yeah, he was at some, like, press conference, or I don't even really know what it was, but he was talking about how Disney's indoctrinating kids, you know, all the classic talking points. And then he said, quote, in every episode now, they're going to have Mickey and Pluto going at it.
Bro, I wish.
Pluto's a dog. Pluto's the dog. Like, if Mickey is the humanoid character in this instance, Pluto's still a dog.
That's what you're thinking about, Ted Cruz? Mickey is human-coded. Pluto is dog-coded.
Yeah. Maybe Ted Cruz is the one indoctrinating kids. Talking about
Ted Cruz a freak. Cruz is a zoophile, for real.
Maybe. Anyway, I wanted to end this discussion real quick.
Okay.
On a little talk about electoralism.
Mm-hmm.
Vis-a-vis the culture war. Because right now, a lot of people would probably say that Democrats are losing the culture war, right?
Facts.
Right now, Biden is sitting at a 41% approval rating, which is about the lowest in his presidency. I think he was at like 40% at one point.
Okay.
But he's at 41 right now. It's been declining since July. These are like Trump numbers, basically.
Yeah.
I don't think Trump ever broke. He definitely never broke over 40, but I think that, or 50, but the highest Trump ever got was probably like 46 or something like that.
Okay.
Trump sat at about 41 his entire presidency. So they're about the same at the moment.
Nice.
Which isn't good. You know,
not good.
Elections
at all
are coming up.
Very not optically good.
Elections are coming up. If history can be referenced, based on, you know, Democrats winning a sweep in 2020, they're probably set to lose quite a bit in 2022. Not good,
not
right?
Good,
you know,
all.
Historically, president's midterm, not good.
Mm-mm.
But A lot of people are going to claim Democrats are losing the culture war, but I want to make the point.
Okay.
The Democrats can't win the culture war.
By design.
Yeah, exactly. By design. For two reasons, I think. First, these culture war items, whether they be like critical race theory, transgender people, LGBTQ topics in schools, whatever. These issues, I think, are built to animate the right more than they're built to animate the left purposefully.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think your average voter who may typically vote Democrat doesn't really care about critical race theory.
Oh, no.
They're focused on the Biden policies that he said he would institute, like canceling student debt, the child tax credit, paid maternity leave, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're focused on issues that affect them, like, as working people.
Mm-hmm.
But the right gets very animated by these topics like CRT and trans people and stuff like that. It just doesn't excite people that engage with politics that much.
Oh, no.
Or that don't engage with politics that much. But it does activate the right quite a bit.
The Democrats have nothing equally because all of their things are in reaction to all of the horrible shit that the right is doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not like I feel like the Democrats have found themselves doing this weird balancing act where they simultaneously have to appease the people who vote for them and the corporate donors who they really care about, the people that are giving them all the fucking money. And so they can't enact policies that would actually materially change the lives of a wide, wide voter base who cares for things like $15 minimum wage, Medicare for all, because that would piss off their corporate donors. Because especially because if you didn't know, what was that thing you told me about the elections? Like how you get funding for the Democratic Party?
So in order to be endorsed by the DCCC, which I don't remember what the acronym means, but it's the Democratic Committee for funding like congressional candidates. In order to get endorsed by them, you have to prove that you can scroll through your phone book or who you have in your contacts list and raise $250,000
just in front of them.
You have to prove that you can do it on your own before they will give you any money and endorse you as a candidate for office, which just sets an incredibly high bar and locks any working class person out of running for office and being endorsed by the DCCC, which is important because they have a lot of money for Democratic candidates. They are a very powerful force when it comes to primaries, especially.
So, and it's like with that, they can't piss those people off.
Yeah.
So they can only enact policies that are either we're not Trump.
Yep.
Like we're seeing most campaigns being run off right now. We're not Trump. We're not the Republican Party. Or
Terry McCullough, baby. That's a McCullough strategy.
Exactly. Or guys, racism is bad, but there's nothing we can really do about it. So don't defund the police. Maybe we'll train the police a little bit more. And that kind of gets people. The only people that they can get to vote for them are the people that are voting for damage control and the people who are in a well enough economic position that they can just sit there and they can act. They have the time to care and research these social issues.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And I'll tell you why Democrats struggle a lot to break through the culture war. Because Democrats are usually always on the right side of the culture war.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the culture war is a political tool manufactured by the right to piss a lot of people off and scare them that, you know, like gay black people are going to come shoot up your home or something like that. Like it's all fake. It's all just manufactured nonsense. But Democrats struggle so much. And this is my second point, to break through the noise, because regardless of the progress they tell or the numbers that they say or like accomplishments that they have, if people don't substantively feel it, you can't break through that noise.
Exactly.
Like the recent talking point I've seen is Biden and his team have been talking about how they had the most job growth in U.S. history under their administration. First of all, that's a little wonky to say. You're taking it a little out of context because jobs were coming back from the pandemic still.
Exactly.
But at the same time.
That's the other thing. So many of the Biden statistics are out of context because of the COVID recovery.
Yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't matter how many numbers you tout. If people don't feel like things are changing, you can't break through the culture war. Now, that's not to say that if Democrats deliver, they immediately win.
Yeah.
But I am saying that if you want to break through that noise, you have to ensure that you can actually tell people, like, the reason you're feeling this is because of what we did.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to, one, fight back against the culture war issues. You're always going to have to do that. That's just always going to be the case. But you also have to say, like, look, child tax credit, if they hadn't gotten rid of it, they could have said, look, child tax credit, you've had this for the last few years now. This is because of us. Mm-hmm. This is going to go away unless you get out to vote.
Yeah.
Of course, now it's completely gone and they can't say that. But if Democrats actually started delivering and doing things with each other, you know, actually having real accomplishments, then they could break through the culture war and say, like, look, Republicans are focused on telling your kids that gay people exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we are focused on delivering actual material change for you.
But again, crazy.
They can't do that because they're restricted by their corporate donors.
I was going to say the corporate wing of the party is the whole fucking bird.
Yeah.
You know what? They can't get away from that. That's why you need to elect leftist candidates.
Yep.
That's why you need to build a broader leftist caucus within the party to eventually take over. You know what I mean?
The problem with that is that every time people attempt to do that, mainstream Democrats start blaming all of their problems on the leftists rather than the entirety of the Republican Party.
And they
party.
Use all their DCCC money to come back after these grassroots candidates.
Yeah.
The people who are actually trying to do things, because they can't ever, neoliberal Democrats can't ever fucking reach the people that don't vote because they don't care about the culture war. And if they do, they're already Republicans. Yeah. You're never going to reach them. They care about putting food on the table. They care about policies that are just going to make their lives materially better. And it's enact the $15 minimum wage. You got to do shit like that.
Right. And it's like Joe Biden expects black voters to turn out for him after he literally said we need to fund the police at a State of the Union address.
And he expects black voters to turn out for him literally because he's not Trump.
Yes.
Fucking roll the if you don't vote for me, Jack, you ain't black.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
If Democrats actually want to break through this culture war grift, they have to start delivering on things. And this, and I'm not saying like voters that turned out in 2020 are for some reason going to like flip to the Republican Party and stop voting blue. I think they're just not going to turn out at all.
They're absolutely not going to turn out. I was reading this NBC article earlier about how a lot of the younger millennial Gen Z voters that can vote, that actually came out to vote, voted because of what he said about student debt.
Right.
Voted because of all those things. That was one of the only issues that could actually galvanize a base of people that didn't vote.
Uh-huh.
And what has he done with that? Kind of spit in everybody's face.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, I don't want to leave this section off without offering something practical. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to just be negative. So there are things, like, I don't think the ship has sailed by any means. We're in April. Primary elections are coming up in the next few months for just about every state in the country. And we're going to have elections at the end of the year, right, in November. Facts. I don't think the ship has sailed, though.
No.
I think there's still time to do some things. But the main thing that I think Biden literally has to do is cancel student debt.
For sure. It's something he can do. It's something he can literally just go and do.
It is the only, in my mind, the only surefire way that you can break through the culture war, have something to campaign on, and immediately help like 40 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine if you could, like I've said this before, imagine if you could just make 41 million people happy before an election and say, like, I did that for you.
Like, speaking of that, if he's not waiting till like a closer time, like during till November, like if he's not waiting until like September, October to do it, and he's just not going to do it at all, you deserve to lose at that point. Like, if he hasn't done it so far because of political strategy to like wait until it's fresh on people's minds before they go and vote, and he's just not planning on doing it, you deserve all the losses.
Yeah. No, if he's not like trying to do some political game where he still plans to do it, then like, I don't know what to tell
you. Which is still fucked because you're playing with people's lives.
Yeah.
But I get it.
Yeah. No, I get it too. And it's not like we're trying to say like Republicans should win.
But absolutely
at that point,
not.
At that point, it's like you're not even trying.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah.
Like, you don't even want to win, nor do you even want to help the people that elected you. And I say cancel student debt because realistically, it's the only thing that he can do without legislation, even though he claims he needs legislation for it. But also, I want to make a note that $10,000 is not enough off of debt either.
Absolutely not.
Because the average student in America has an average federal student loan debt of $37,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that is only in federal loans. That does not account private loans, which tend to be much
horrible.
Worse.
Like 13% interest rates, horrible.
Yeah. $10,000 off that number helps quite a bit. Uh-huh. Would make lots of people happy. But that is still years of repayment for a lot of people.
And that is still only 20% of what he promised.
Yeah. And like, I want to make a note that when it comes to debt, we have known for literally all of human history that debt acts as an anchor on your economic mobility.
Yeah.
You are less likely to take risks. You're less likely to do things like start a business. You're less likely to seek a better job. You're less likely to move, start a family, yada, 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 spend money in the economy if you have debt attached to you.
Yeah.
And the point is that if you have $37,000 in student debt, you get $10,000 knocked off of it, you're at $20,000 or $27,000 and you have to start repaying. You still have an anchor on your leg.
Yeah.
You still can't move economically. The point of removing student debt is to make it so students are able to engage in upward social mobility, because that's basically going away in this country.
Oh, facts.
And if you want students to be able to do that, to spend money in the economy, because young people spend money a lot, to do things like buy homes and start families and keep the American experiment alive, you have to take away all of that debt, or at least a substantial amount, or a substantial enough amount to the point where they're not having to pay back hundreds of thousands of dollars every month and can actually do things with their life.
Yeah.
Like, taking off $10,000 just isn't enough. They're still going to have to be paying back hundreds of thousands of dollars every single month, and that's going to inhibit their ability to achieve economically. And if we want to do anything about that, and if you want to encourage voters to get out to the polls, you got to do more. You have to do more.
Because, like, what, in-state tuition costs, like, $100K?
Yeah.
$100K for a bachelor's degree?
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy. Fuck you if you want to go to grad school, because that shit is wild. Looking at pharmacy school, $300K.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, not even to mention that student debt cancellation is literally right now the best and most practical way to eliminate the wealth gap between racial groups. It's the best way to do it, because it will allow every racial group, regardless of income before going to college, to get a college degree and succeed economically afterwards, because education is the best way to engage in upward social mobility. It's the best thing he can do for the racial wealth gap. It's the best thing he can do for young people to get them to turn out to vote. And it's literally the best thing he can do for the economy. But he's not gonna do it. He's just not gonna do it.
That's crazy. Crazy. Or maybe he's saving it till 2024 when he runs again.
Jesus Christ. I mean, I don't know if he's saving it or not, but I will say that approval rating right now among young people for Biden is even lower than average.
Really?
It's at like 39 or 38% compared
to 41. Who likes this guy then? Who's dragging it up?
I don't know.
Is it like 40-year-olds? Is it 40-year-olds out of voted for Obama for a third time kind of guys?
Like, the only way to get young people to turn out, and I'm saying this as a young person, like, I know, the only way to get them to turn out is literally light them on fire. Like,
yeah, no, most of my friends do not give a shit.
Right. Like, they're apolitical because they want to focus on like having a good time, being in college, living their life before they, you know, focus on real shit. But if you want to get people to turn out, give them something exciting. And that's what student debt was for a lot of people.
Because right now, a lot of the people who are apolitical only hear about gas prices.
Yeah.
And they think it's all Biden's fault.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Those I did that stickers have done irreparable damage.
Yeah. And I think abortion could be another issue that animates the left, but that's not because of anything Democrats have done. That's because of like the existential threat from Republicans just like looming over the issue of abortion. So that could get people to turn out. Maybe they could say, like, you know, if we get more Democrats in the Senate, then we'll codify Roe v. Wade into law so the Supreme Court can't mess with it. But they've also been saying that for like 50 years. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe you could do something like, you know, get Joe Biden out on the picket lines, get him supporting like unionization efforts at Amazon and stuff. I think that'd be pretty good optically,
but like, no,
gotta start delivering, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta start delivering.
Have him give like a good speech, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. He can't do that. He can't do that. And I mean, it's not like they're like one speech away.
Oh yeah. From fixing the political issues. I am far from somebody who thinks that a good speech is what's going to get people out there voting and what's going to change the world. Far from that, but still it helps.
Yeah. No, well, like optically it helps. And I think like him saying that, you know, we need to eliminate student debt, like all of it, eliminate student debt, him actually taking efforts to do that, him actually taking efforts to do something on abortion. Like those are the big issues that are animating people right now. And honestly, what they've been doing just isn't enough. And like historical trends suggest that Democrats are going to get washed in this election. And unless they start doing something now or within the next few months, not going to be good.
Kind of fucked on. These debates next week are going to be very interesting
because
they don't really have much to defend themselves with.
Yeah, no, the debates are going to be fun, especially the Republican primary debates. All they have is vitriol in their heart. All they have is hatred built up for Joe Biden and the Democrats and liberals in general, and I can't wait to just see it fall out.
This next round of candidates really just something.
Because, like, you know, the Democratic primaries, it's everyone trying to, like, position themselves for, like, the most electable candidate.
For the most electable candidate who can also appeal to the most donors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for the Republican primary, it's who can be the most fucking insane person possible.
The most racist.
Yes.
The most sexist. It's like that Nick Fuentes speech.
Yeah.
And the most homophobic. Within the confines of still like having some appeal.
Exactly. Like it's who can be the craziest candidate. And I'm very excited for it. We'll cover it next week. It'll be fun. But before we get into our last few topics, I want to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene briefly.
Briefly.
Because she took the stand recently.
Okay.
She was the first lawmaker to be implicated and take the stand for being implicated in the January 6th insurrection. And she was at a court of law in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Last week, I think it started like last Wednesday or something like that. And of course, it's on C-SPAN, so you know we got to take a look at some of the clips.
Naturally.
Yeah, you know, friend of the show, Marjorie Taylor Greene. But anyway, she's in the court. Again, I'll remind you all, she's in the court for violating the 14th Amendment. A group of citizens got together and they're suing her. for violating the 14th Amendment, her oath of office, because 14th Amendment says you can't rebel against the United States, if you didn't know.
Huh.
So if you're an elected official, don't do that, probably.
Don't do that, maybe, if you're aspiring hopes and dreams.
The prosecution's goal here is to draw a line between her actions on January 6th and prior to that, and the actions of January 6th rioters, right? To implicate her as much as possible, to draw the line between what she did, what she encouraged, and what people ended up doing.
Mm-hmm.
And her goal has been to be as slippery as an eel.
Oh, yeah.
To deny, deny, deny.
Lie, lie, deny. But don't lie too hard because you'll perjure yourself. But also, when somebody wants to bring up the receipts, walk everything you said back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So when she was asked if she thought the 2020 election was stolen, the prosecution was acting like, you do think it was stolen, though, right? She said, she didn't even answer the question. She said, quote, I was asking people to come for a peaceful march, which is what everyone is entitled to do under the First Amendment, but I was not asking them to actively engage in violence or any type of action.
Wow.
Yeah. Fighting for democracy. Fight for your country, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then she was also questioned about her saying that Nancy Pelosi is a traitor. And I think you all should take a listen. Well, roll the clip real quick. Take a listen.
In fact, you think that Speaker Pelosi is a traitor to the country, right?
I'm not answering that question. It's speculation.
You've said that, haven't you, Ms. Green, that she's a traitor to the country?
No, I haven't said that.
Okay. Put up Plaintiff's Exhibit 5, please.
Oh, no, wait. Hold on now. I believe by not upholding the securing the border, that violates her oath of office.
Fair enough. I'm not interested in her oath of office. I'm interested in that you said that she's a traitor to our country, right?
Wasn't that something?
she said not protecting the border violates her oath of office. I love how she can just abandon any of her stances when new evidence is presented. You know what I mean?
Hold on. Wait.
Actually, what I meant to say, in a court of law, like, you're on camera.
I know. Like, what, did she think she was going to get away with that?
Just absolutely no shame.
Did she not hear about any of the subpoenas that went through? Like, anything?
And then in relation to her calling Nancy Pelosi a traitor, apparently she also liked a post on social media. I don't know if it's like Facebook or Twitter or something.
Okay.
That was calling for Nancy Pelosi to be shot in the head. And then she blamed it on a staffer. So she pulled the Ted Cruz liking porn on 9/11. But she said it was a staffer. I had multiple people managing my account. I don't know who did that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. Yeah. Imagine being a person of power and getting caught doing that.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Can't even imagine. So far, CNN has counted that she has said, I don't remember or I don't recall 50 times. At least 50 times. So maybe, yeah, I saw this take on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. Someone said on Twitter that she said, I don't remember so many times. Maybe she's not fit for office and needs a dementia test at this point.
Oh, true. Her memory's looking pretty shoddy.
It seems like she's having trouble remembering what happened just about a year ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to give it a brief update on that because the trial is going to continue for a few weeks.
Okay.
At which point a judge will offer, and this is where the situation gets a little fucky. Cool. The judge is going to offer a recommendation to the Secretary of State's office on if she's disqualified or if she should be disqualified.
Oh.
And then the Secretary of State decides based on that.
So they can do whatever the fuck they want, basically. Yeah. So it does not matter.
And of course, in Georgia right now, Secretary of State's a Republican. But it is the Republican that didn't let Trump overturn the election. But I feel like that's not really an accomplishment. That should be the expectation, you know?
The bar is in hell.
I feel like that's kind of what you're expected to do, to not allow anyone to overturn an election.
Yeah, that shouldn't really be a point of praise that he didn't find 13,000 votes out of thin air. But yeah. This is where we are.
Ultimately, I think it's unlikely that Marjorie Taylor Greene will get disqualified from running. I don't think we're in the correct universe for that to happen.
Yeah, I don't think we're in the good timeline, folks.
Not at all. But I love how it's really just, like, the whole story around January 6th has just been steadily unraveling over the last few weeks. And again, it's unlikely that she gets disqualified, but I also think it's even more unlikely that she claims to not remember anything.
Oh, yeah.
Because information just came out that, like, Don Jr. and the entire Trump family was planning the insurrection on email, like sending email links to each other, like, this is what we're going to do, and then claiming that they have no idea what's going on. Like, Jared Kushner just got $2 billion from the Saudi crown prince out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, for nothing, just for being... And for nothing. They love to bring up the Hunter Biden. It's the same fucking thing. Mm-hmm. They all do the same thing.
You know what the Saudi royal family said about Jared Kushner, though?
Oh, no.
They said they wanted to keep the $2 billion, like, on the down low, because they were worried he would be a PR disaster for them. The Saudi crown prince, known for killing journalists, was worried that Jared Kushner would be a PR problem. Can you believe that?
That's crazy. I mean, I can. Yeah. I mean, to be fair.
And then also recently, Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell were revealed to have said on the phone, I don't know if it was to each other or just separately, that Donald Trump needed to resign after January 6th.
Man,
they were saying they were sick of him.
Really?
And then, of course, Kevin McCarthy was like, oh, I didn't say that. You know, this is the liberal media trying to bash me and destroy my image. And then on CNN, like, the next night, they just played an audio recording of him literally saying that.
Dude's been having a bad time. Between that time. And the Madison Cawthorn orgy comments.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene being a Nazi.
He can't get away from it right now. That's crazy.
Bro wants to be Speaker of the House so bad. Anyway, that sums it up on Marjorie Taylor Greene. We'll see where this goes. I doubt she'll get disqualified. That'd be brazy if she did, though.
That'd be pretty cool.
My faith in democracy would be restored just a little bit if she did.
The bar would be slightly out of hell.
Yeah, maybe.
Slightly.
Maybe. Is it time to talk about the death penalty?
I think it's time to talk about Texas doing another bad thing.
Naturally.
It seems to be a weekly segment.
Texas and Florida, baby.
Exactly. But specifically, we're going to talk about the Melissa Lucio's 2008 murder case. Mm-hmm. And I've compiled some details to sort of give you the context surrounding the case and why she's on the death penalty.
Yeah.
And to talk about how fucked it is, obviously, because we only talk about bad things here, you know?
Yeah, naturally.
Naturally. So let's get right into it. Melissa was convicted and sentenced to death for murdering her 2-year-old daughter in 2008, right?
Okay.
2 days before her daughter died, she fell down a flight of stairs. Yep. She fell down 14 stairs, 2 years old. Keep that in mind. Yeah. Very important detail. Since the fall, she hadn't been able to eat. She was throwing up anything she ate. She could barely keep juice down. And she was sleeping all the time until she eventually went for a nap and never woke up.
Yeah.
2 days after the fall.
Yeah.
Melissa called the ambulance. She died on the way to the hospital. And cops, 2 hours later, immediately took her back to interrogate her. Six cops in one room with this woman whose daughter just died.
Mm.
Very important image to keep in your head. So when she was first taken in, she was interrogated for 5 straight hours until 3 a.m. right after her daughter died, using the Reed technique.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Reed interrogation technique?
No, not at all.
It is literally just gaslighting.
Of course.
And it is also illegal in several Western European countries.
Oh.
Not here, though. Land of the free, baby.
Yeah, of course.
Land of the free, because it's known for small false government confessions.
Right, yeah.
From Wikipedia, quote, in the Reed technique, interrogation is an accusatory process in which the investigator tells the subject that the results of the investigation clearly indicate they did commit the crime in question.
Oh, so it's end just quote. Lying.
It's, yeah, it's lying. Just gaslighting.
You know, I feel like we've known, like, as human beings, we've learned what good interrogation techniques are over the last at least few decades, but we've known for like 100 years at least what good interrogation techniques are. We know that holding someone for hours on end until they say what we want to hear is a great way to lead to false confessions.
No, because it culminated.
It's a kind of mental torture, honestly.
Oh, it literally, let me tell you what they did to her. During Melissa's interrogation, they were in her face the whole time, showing her pictures of her dead child.
Jesus.
They would yell at her, telling her that she did it in one moment, and then in another tell her that she could make this all stop if she just admitted to it. And so after denying it over 100 times over the course of the 5 hours, finally at 3 a.m. she said, I guess I did it.
Yeah, of course.
I guess I did it then. She's later talking to attorneys. She said that, well, she just wanted it to stop.
Yeah.
Obviously, you getting yelled at by six fucking cops. That's scary for anybody.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. And your kid just died. Yeah.
Exactly. So in the actual trial, the judge would not allow testimony from a psychologist as to why someone might give a false confession.
Oh, wow.
So that was just completely thrown out. Jurors didn't know about any of that beforehand.
I love the criminal justice system.
It's such a good system, right? In the trial, the medical examiner who performed the autopsy on her daughter said it was the worst case of abuse, because that's what the charges were. They said that Melissa, it wasn't her fault. She beat the child to death. That's what she was being charged with.
What?
Yeah. That's what she was being charged with. Hear me out.
Oh, my God.
In the trial, the medical examiner who performed the autopsy said it was the worst case of child abuse she had ever seen because of the bruises found on her body, and said that the damage to her head couldn't have been from falling down a flight of stairs. Absolute fucking cap for 500. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I will take absolute cap.
If we're playing Jeopardy, that'd be an easy win.
My God. In fact, a lot of what the medical examiner said was misleading or just outright false. The freedomproject.org reported, quote, "At Miss Lucio's trial, the medical examiner testified that the bruises and injuries on Maria's body could only have been caused by abuse. However, pathologists who have reviewed the evidence have concluded that the testimony was false. Maria's autopsy showed signs of blood coagulation disorder, which causes profuse bruising throughout the body. At the time of her death, Maria was healing from an injury to her arm, which the medical examiner also said was a sign of abuse. However, a pediatric orthopedic surgeon who reviewed the evidence concluded that the medical examiner's testimony was misleading, and there is, quote, within the quote, nothing about Maria's fracture indicates that it was the result of an intentional act of abuse. This was extremely common type of injury among toddlers that could result from fall from standing height."
Maybe you'll get to this later in the story, but I can't even begin to fathom, like, what's the point of just, like, being so harsh to this woman?
Oh, just wait.
Okay. Okay.
It's like a cherry on top. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm still continuing the quote from freedomproject.org. "The medical examiner also testified at trial that a mark on Maria's body were bite marks. Bite mark analysis had been wholly discredited since Miss Lucio's trial because it has no scientific basis."
Okay, of course.
"Studies have shown that even trained forensic dentists," I didn't even know that was a fucking thing, outside of like dental record shit, "can't agree whether or not an injury is a bite mark. In 2016, in recognition of the fact that bite mark evidence lacks scientific validity, and following the exoneration of a man in Texas convicted based on faulty bite mark evidence, the Texas Forensic Science Commission recommended a statewide moratorium on the use of bite mark evidence in criminal cases."
Wow.
To be fair, that was 8 years after her trial.
Yeah.
But this is in the info doc to try to get her off the death penalty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'll get there because, folks, there's frankly a lot more. Other key evidence was just not presented to the jury. Classic. Naturally. Classic. There had been over 1,000 pages of CPS documents surrounding the family, and not one of them suggested any physical abuse, nor did any physical evidence, like, on the kids.
Why was there so many pages of CPS documents?
The family was in abject poverty, and there were cases of neglect. Like, the kids got taken away for 2 years because she had a stint with drugs.
Okay.
Her and her boyfriend got into cocaine and shit.
Yeah.
And so they were addicted, so the kids got taken away. That's a whole host of, like, other issues, though, not really directly related to the trial.
Yeah.
But needless to say, there is no physical abuse. There's no debate. She's not a great mom.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's not a great family dynamic. But this is about whether or not this trial was just, whether or not our criminal system isn't fucked up, and whether or not the death penalty is just ethical.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody is saying that she was a great mom.
Yeah, of course. That's not what's on trial either.
Exactly.
Nor is that a crime unless, you know, necessarily there's like some amount of neglect that causes some amount of harm to people.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, like, in regards to what you said about CPS, she got her kids back after some time.
She got her kids back after 2 years.
She went through the legal procedures to remedy whatever problem was happening.
Yeah.
Meaning that
she was clean.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. She had already gone through all the processes necessary to, I don't know, make amends with her situation or whatever.
She also had 12 kids at the time, so that's fucked. They were only receiving about $2,000 to $2,500 in welfare benefits.
Yeah.
For 14 people, ain't shit.
Also want to note that you really only ever see this kind of dynamic with people that are in poverty, almost as if poverty, like, causes these things.
Exactly.
Almost as
that's
if, you know,
crazy.
We fix the material conditions of, you know, families that are in abject poverty. Not only would you help parents, but you would also help children that are literally there through no fault of their own.
Exactly.
Just a thought, by the way. Just a little crumb
to
throw out to you.
Yeah, but like, while the neglect and things like that isn't pertinent to this case, the fact that there are CPS documents reaffirming that no abuse had ever gone on is very important, and that wasn't presented to the jurors.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. The jury had also been kept in the dark about critical context just surrounding Melissa and her past, specifically the fact that she had been dealing with sexual abuse since she was 6 years old.
Oh my God.
And domestic violence from then on. When she was 16, she got married to a 20-year-old and couldn't get out of it because it's a fucking child marriage. She can't sign divorce papers till she's 18.
Yeah.
And was stuck in that abusive relationship, only to get into another abusive relationship with her boyfriend at the time, who wasn't even questioned about this, really. He was sentenced to, like, death by omission or murder by omission just for not checking up on her. But, you know, if they're going to claim abuse, don't you think he would also equally kind of have to share in this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, fuck, I don't know.
So much fucked shit surrounding the case. Anyway, let's get to the death penalty now.
Okay.
That's, like, the rough details. I would suggest you go to freedomproject.org. All you have to do is look up her name, Melissa Lucino, Freedom Project, and it's one of the first links. It's a really good resource. You can also just look up her name, and there are a plethora of articles about it.
Yep.
And there's not really any that are bad. Even the New York Post one was, like, pretty good, because another thing that these articles are bringing up, Republican lawmakers and Democrat lawmakers in Texas are, like, coming together to try to get her off death row.
Yeah.
And it's up to a committee. This is being recorded on Sunday, April 24th. Tomorrow, on Monday, April 25th, there's a committee that's going to decide whether or not they are going to postpone her, like, date to be executed.
Yeah.
Because she's set to be executed on Wednesday, April 27th.
Oh, yikes.
And based on that, Greta, they've submitted an appeal to, like, the pardon commissioner, whatever the fuck, and it's basically going to be in Greg Abbott's hands, whether or not he wants to pardon her.
Greg Abbott's very competent hands.
That's right. Or it's going to be in the hands of, like, other judiciary processes, whether or not there could be a retrial.
Yeah.
And shit like that. But it's kind of not looking good. You know what I mean? But for these reasons, that's very fucked, mm-hmm. right? But let's get into the death penalty. In Texas, in order to qualify for the death penalty, a prosecutor has to prove that this person has future dangerousness. Mm-hmm. That's like the term. You know what I mean? And so in Melissa's case, every single person that testified in her trial also said that she had never hurt anyone. They had never seen her hurt. Anybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they can't really go off that to prove future dangerousness. So instead, they turn to her disciplinary record from the time she was being jailed at, like, while she was being held before trial.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read you her disciplinary record, and I want you to tell me if she is a dangerous woman.
Okay. Okay.
She is actually
hardened criminal.
Insane. If she is a hardened criminal, not fit for society.
Okay.
All right. Starting here. For a December 1st, 2007, I'm reading just straight off the website, National Memo. We'll put these in the description.
Okay.
So you can go check it out for yourself, right? So for a December 1st, 2007 disciplinary report for possessing tattoo paraphernalia, the corresponding incident report has the no action taken box checked, and it was not referred for discipline. A December 12th, 2007 disciplinary report doesn't list a rule violation and instead just says verbal warning, where the officer should write the rule she violated. There's no incident report from the same date, but an incident report from the day before detailing a scenario where a guard said Lucio kept or used too much cleaning fluid, which the guard didn't like. Lucio protested that another staff member directed her to clean her area that way. The guard writes in the incident report that she thought Lucio was disrespecting and intimidating her. If there were a rule violation, an officer would have written it in the disciplinary form. Nobody did. A disciplinary report from February 15, 2008 for alleged fighting was completely thrown out. A lieutenant voided it and the words no action on the bottom of it occurred. An incident report from the same date reads no action taken due to investigation. The inmate was not involved. If you go to the Freedom Projects page, they talk about that. And specifically, the only way that she was involved in the fight is because she tried to break it up.
Oh my fucking God.
Insane. Also, with regards to tattoo paraphernalia, it was in a lamp that four people had access to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's another report on April 16th, 2008, for possession of contraband. The corresponding incident report, the one dated April 16th, accuses her of unauthorized communication and details that an officer found notes from Lucio to another inmate in the other inmate's possession, which incidentally means the other inmate possessed contraband, not Lucio.
Naturally.
Exactly, exactly. At the bottom, it's clear the matter was not referred to the disciplinary board.
Yeah.
Insane. Yep. But that's not all, folks. Oh, God. That leaves 5 reports. Among these are 4 identical copies of a December 11, 2007 disciplinary report for allegedly disrespecting other inmates and yelling at them.
Yeah, that requires the death penalty. She's a hardened criminal.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that fucking wild?
Yeah.
Isn't this woman just a menace to society?
I don't know,
guys. An absolute danger?
Jury's still out on that one, no pun intended. I think you guys, we'll put up a Twitter poll. It's real. Is Melissa Lucano or whatever her name
Lucio,
is?
Lucio, is she a hardened criminal? Yeah. Based on those disciplinary reports.
Is Melissa
reports
Lucio
that were,
a hardened criminal?
That were never referred to the disciplinary board?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that fucking insane?
Yeah.
Isn't that insane,
no,
it's
crazy,
right?
Yeah.
You've got to be wondering why they pushed so hard for the death penalty, because that's a reach. Like, frankly, that is all a reach.
That's what I'm sitting here wondering. How about you tell us, Gage?
Let me tell you, at the time, an election was right around the corner, and the district attorney, Armando, I'm going to fucking butcher this last name.
No.
Armando Villalobos, I'm so sorry. Fuck that guy. Never mind. Was yeah. under pressure from voters about perceived leniency on crimes
of
against children.
He was, bro.
So he did naturally what a lot of politicians do and scapegoat a woman of color and ruin her life.
This is going to be a Netflix documentary.
There's a Hulu documentary.
Of course,
there's a Hulu documentary.
A Hulu documentary.
From 2020,
oh,
there's a Hulu
God.
Documentary.
Of course.
Notably, that very same DA is currently serving a 13-year prison sentence for bribery and extortion for a favorable prosecutorial, like rulings and shit.
Seems kind of just in line with their...
From 2006 to 2012.
Just kind of seems in line with what they're doing here, yeah.
Absolutely wild, right? Isn't that fucking crazy? Freedom Project points out, because of her history of abuse,
yeah,
she is much more likely to give a false confession.
Given to coercion,
under
yeah.
pressions like that.
Yeah.
That was never presented to the fucking jury.
Yeah.
Not only was she wrongfully convicted, but she's set to be executed in a couple of days.
Yeah.
For bullshit.
Yeah,
for this dude's political career that he threw away.
Some loser district attorney that's in jail now wanted to kill
federal prison. That's in federal prison now.
Federal prison for, you know, being a criminal.
Uh-huh.
Wanted to kill a woman to get reelected because he was perceived to have been soft on crime.
Right?
Like, this is the consequence of people thinking that we need to be so tough on crime. Like, this is the direct consequence. I know this is just one situation,
yeah.
but I'm sure there are hundreds, thousands of stories that are exactly like this.
Yeah.
Of DAs that were pushed or wanted to be hard on crime.
Speaking of stories that are like this, I want to leave you guys with this stat from also the Freedom Project. Nearly 1 in 3 exonerated women were wrongly convicted of harming children or other loved ones in their care. And over 70% were wrongly convicted of crimes that never took place at all. Events that were accidents, death by suicide, or fabricated, according to data from the National Registry of Exonerations.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
I love...
Crazy.
I love that one of the core tenets of American society is freedom,
mm-hmm.
yet people will just get arrested for things that literally didn't happen.
Yeah.
And will get put in jail for things that are wildly misconstrued.
Uh-huh. I think 5 or 6 of the jurors that were on that case have came out and said that they made the wrong decision.
Yeah.
That there that, needs yeah. to be a retrial.
Yeah.
Fucking insane. At the very least, there needs to be a retrial.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So fucking fucked. What a fucked up case. And the death penalty, flat out unethical.
Oh,
you can
yeah,
fight
for sure.
me on that one if you
yeah.
want. I will go to bat in the comment sections. There is no reason that you should ever kill someone for committing a crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless it's like, I don't know, fucking Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't even use those because that's a very fringe example. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, you can't compare Hitler to a mother who's had experience with drugs and abuse.
Exactly.
Like, that's not
exactly. Because that's what I hear all the time when I talk about, anti-death. Like, oh, what about Hitler? Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
But we're talking about regular citizens who have, like, even citizens who have murdered. I believe in rehabilitative justice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, not to mention, like, we've talked about this plenty of times, but crime almost always is a process that occurs because of poverty.
Yeah, poverty supersedes crime.
Yeah, poverty motivates crime in almost all instances. We've known this for thousands of years, that being in desperate circumstances will cause you to do desperate things and it will create a culture
mm-hmm.
of doing crimes to get by, which leads you to doing more and more, you know, heinous
yeah.
things to other people.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, the mental health component to that of people, you know, killing others.
Yeah.
There's a mental health component there. But, like, if we are going to take crime seriously, First, we have to note that our laws on crimes have always, or not always, but for the last few decades been extremely harsh.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason that around the 80s, when the war on crime kicked off, there was a sharp increase in people being arrested. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because people became more violent. It wasn't because people became more brutal. It was because, and this has literally been admitted by the Nixon administration, there was a war on drugs happening because Nixon wanted to lock up people that were against the Vietnam War, and he wanted to put more black people in jail because he wanted to be popular with his Republican base.
That's right.
And these kinds of laws have caused more and more poverty to be, I don't know, just caused poverty to proliferate more and more.
Exacerbated the issue.
Exacerbated the issue, and it's just created a cycle of crime. Mm-hmm. Not to mention that when people get out, isn't the reoffense rate like 50% or something like that? Like 50% of people
crazy
like that?
How tough on crime policies just make
they
more crime.
They don't work. They don't work. And if we want to ever get around to solving the problem of crime, we got to first acknowledge that, and then also acknowledge that crime is always motivated by poverty, or at least in some way indirectly caused by poverty. And if you want to solve crime on a systemic level, got to solve poverty.
Let's have some social safety nets. That's a tangible solution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's do things like that. Let's have Medicare for all. Let's have free college. Let's have a $15 minimum wage.
Yeah. And it's like,
you know what I mean?
Like these, like petty crimes, for example, like, you know, stealing from people, vandalizing people's like possessions or just like whatever, like harming people, like shooting, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen in wealthy neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah.
It's because in these neighborhoods, people are more materially secure and they're less driven to act like that. But when you're in desperate circumstances, you are driven into a life of crime, whether it be, you know, stealing things, taking from other people, vandalizing things, growing up in a culture that accepts violence as a solution to your problems, whatever it is. It is always motivated by poverty, which is motivated by class divisions.
What a crazy observation, Jeremy.
I know.
Insane.
It's very new,
wild,
original
insight. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know, it doesn't span back to the times of Marcus Aurelius. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
It's new.
That's
a Hitto classic.
Exactly. We're the first ones. We're revolutionizing.
That's a certified Hitto classic right there.
We're revolutionizing the way that we understand the material reality of the world and poverty and literally everything.
That's right.
You heard it here first.
Just final note. The death penalty is just a barbaric relic of an already horrible criminal justice system.
Yep.
Quote me on it.
Yeah. Death penalty, get rid of it.
Death penalty?
It does not.
Bad.
Just like private prisons, does not cause crime rates to go down.
Ooh, I'm going to have to rethink this segment. Now that I'm pro-private prison, I don't know. I think we should be tough on crime.
No, but like actually, the death penalty does not cause crime rates to go down. No effect on crime
rates. No, if somebody's going to, well, other than the people who were falsely accused of crimes that got them put on death row, if somebody's going to commit a crime that's going to put them on death row, that's not what they're thinking about. You know what I mean? They're just going to go do the crime because they're already too far gone to give a shit.
Yeah. No, like it doesn't decrease crime rates in any meaningful capacity. Mm-hmm. Neither did the war on crime, by the way. If anything, it increased crime rates.
Yeah, neither did the war on drugs. One, we lost to something that couldn't really fight back. Yeah. So take that L, Nixon and Reagan.
I'm joining the war on drugs on the side of drugs, people.
I am. I'm there.
It's the winning side. Is the winning side. Anyways, I think that sums it up for the episode.
That does.
Hope you guys enjoyed it.
I really do.
We grabbed the dry rock that was this week's news, and we sucked as much news as we could out of it.
That's right. I tried really hard. Yeah. I was prowling
We ringed as much news as we could out of this week, and we hope it was good for you.
We do.
But before we go.
True.
You already know what's about to happen. We've done this. This is the 42nd time.
Exactly. We have to thank our investors.
Uh-huh.
We have to thank our board of directors real quick.
Our private backers.
For letting this, keeping us going.
We would only ever give you a shout out if you could prove to us that you could sit down and call. You could sit down and raise $250,000 by calling
the contacts. If you could raise about $300 a month for us, then we will shout you out.
Exactly. So we got to give a special thanks to Cricket Scrapbook Layouts, Nikki Nine Lives, Kaden Kraut, Terrence Nicholson, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Katz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Maddie ST, John G., The B-Plot, Clayton LaForte, got it right that time.
Let's go.
Ash Fairblood, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Derek Messina, Dylan B., Saints Menstrual Cycle, The Mind Sculptors, Kaz, and my mom. Thank you all for supporting the show on Patreon. If I'm saying any of those names wrong still, I've been learning that I say the names wrong sometimes. Hit me up. I'll try to fix it.
Just let us say the wrong names.
Almost a year.
And wait until now to correct us. Insane.
Anyways, before we go, we'll remind you, check out the Patreon. Check out our Discord. It's all going to be in the description.
It's really fun. The Discord's pretty cool. Got a popping community going on.
Lots
if I do say so myself.
Lots of exciting things planned for the future. Next week, midterms episode. Stay tuned.
That's right.
And thanks for listening.
Have a good one.